roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty here on Christmas Eve. What is up? That's right. Look, we didn't want to let the holidays stop us from hanging out with you like we have for the past, 18 months or so, ever since we came off SiriusXM and went back to podcast form, now joined Sportscaster. We get a thrill out of hanging out with you. So we checked in with the suits. We checked in with the video team. A few of them are still working. I said, let's put out a show then, you know. It's not like we hate doing it. And there's always something to talk about, for sure. So on today's show, we're going to focus on news mostly and a little fun, you know. I mean, it is Christmas Eve. It might even be Christmas, honestly, in like New Zealand, Australia. They're way ahead of us. So Merry Christmas to all, to those that celebrate. Happy holidays to everyone else, because I really never really did well in my religious studies or any of my cultural studies in terms of Kwanzaa and all the other dates on the calendar. But I just want you all to be happy, whatever it is that you celebrate. Happy holidays has always been this blanket statement. Happy holidays, you know, because you're not sure. A few years ago, I said, nah, I'm going to say Merry Christmas because that's what I grew up on. And most people would tell me Merry Christmas back. So I was like, oh, here, I'm trying to make everybody happy. I'm going to say Merry Christmas, and people can say back to me whatever they want, and then those that don't celebrate can state that if they want as well. Same way when I offer Richard Hunter, or when I tell him, oh, man, there's a great burger right down the street, and then he reminds me I don't eat meat. Oh, okay. All right, cool. No big deal. All right, we're going to have fun. Buckle up, folks. It's MMA Junkie Radio on Thursday, December 24th. We'll be back. Also, we might have a surprise guest pop in. That's how we roll over here at Junkie Radio.
Hola amigos, Danny Segura dropping in. Just wanted to let you know about MMA Junkie's latest podcast. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish language show dedicated to all things professional fighting. Each Monday, we recap the major events from the weekend, plus we analyze the week's biggest news. We also bring you exclusive interviews with the best fighters, coaches, and experts in the Hispanic and Latin American scene. You can find Hablemos MMA every Monday morning on your favorite podcasting platform. Suscríbete y nos hablamos pronto. Chao.
Internal clock had me at 8. Took that last sip of coffee. Goes, it's not even the end of 2020, but how about the fact that old Connie Mack, that's Conor McGregor, is already kind of like on everybody's game plan. He's not the first card when we come back in 2020. That distinction belongs to Max Holloway and Calvin Kattar, but it'll be the first pay-per-view, McGregor versus Poirier. You know, these guys are camping during the holidays, you know, but I've been seeing a lot of threads, a lot of stuff with McGregor's name out there.
You know, now that I think about it, when this guy comes back, it might be just the perfect timing because, let's be honest, it's not going to be what we're used to, that typical Conor McGregor fight weekend where you, when he's fighting here in Vegas, the town, I mean, you just see all the Irish come in at once. They're all over the bars. They're all over the place on the strip. It's not going to be like that. We don't know what it's going to be like, really, that experience of Conor McGregor now, but some of the sports will be over with by that time. And, you're not going to have that many options for entertainment. And Conor McGregor is entertainment. He's a guy that even when you watch the same way, you know, when Mike Tyson fights, we're talking about Mike Tyson because he's the big name in boxing. If you watch a boxing show and Conor McGregor fights, they talk about him because it's vice versa. It's the same thing. He's just a big star overall. So he's going to be covered in a lot of different ways. I'm excited for it. I can't wait to see it. Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor have both shown that they're just different fighters now. So I think this fight's going to be way different than it was the first time. And it's going to be fun, man. I'm excited to kind of, every time you see certain fighters, things just start to feel a little bit more normal.
Now, there are rumors that at the Flash Forum in Abu Dhabi, they might let in some fans. Of course, they've created a bubble, but that bubble's only been for those that work in, I'm not sure what it's called, maybe Flash or Entertainment or something like that. The people that have to assist in putting the show together and the UFC people. It's a 10-mile square radius area that they've made it difficult for you to penetrate through unless you're scheduled to be there. But that was the talk a few months ago. We'll see. In fact, goes at this point, we don't even know if it's going to be for the undisputed title. It could be because Dana and Habib have yet to have that combo. I thought we all expected something like an early December, mid-December combo. And I haven't heard that they've had that. You know, I don't know if it was supposed to take place in person, via video conference or what, phone, text, who knows. But it sounded to me, you know, when Khabib tweeted something like "See you soon, boss" or something like that, you know, they were going to meet up, and that's when we would know if Dana could talk him into coming back. Khabib's put out at least 5 interviews stating "I'm retired." Dana White saying he thinks he can convince him to come back. Khabib's dad wanted him to get the 30 wins, and maybe he might want to do that for his father. So. Who knows? I don't think he would be allowed to answer that question after McGregor Poirier. Because let's face it, I think Dana is very interested in Khabib versus Conor McGregor. Very interested. I don't think there's a fight that interests him more than that. That's not to say he wouldn't be interested in Khabib versus Poirier or anyone else. But I'm just saying I think the bullseye is that one. So I think at some point he's going to probably have to make a decision. They're going 5 rounds regardless, but I don't think they'll make it for an interim. I think he's going to need an answer. Kind of like Cejudo, when Cejudo said, "I'm ghost." He may come back, but I'm ghost at this moment. There was a vacant title there, and Peter Yan won it, you know, over Jose Aldo. So I think something like that. Like, these two will fight for the undisputed title, I'm starting to think, and I think Khabib's going to stick to his guns. Khabib can still change his mind. He's still early 30s. But what are your thoughts as all this is going to have to come in play soon?
I just don't understand. I mean, I would rather know that now than later. The more and more you push it, I think the more and more ridiculous it starts to look, especially when one guy is just completely adamant about being retired. But I have a question for you. If he's in attendance that night, which I gotta believe he will be, who would it affect more, Conor McGregor or Dustin Poirier? And would it affect them in a positive or negative way? Because both guys have faced him. Both guys had a really rough outing. When you see that face, it's just going to kind of remind you of that scenario. But with Conor, sometimes those things kind of pull something out of him and he gets a little crazy. I don't know. So what do you think of that question? Like, how do you think that would play out?
Okay, so I think it affects McGregor more. I think he's definitely more emotional. Every time he even reads a tweet from Khabib, I bet you his blood pressure goes up just a little bit, a couple heartbeats. You know what I mean? I think he just thinks, can I capitalize here? Can I zing him back? Did he just zing me? Should I just be polite? Should I watch myself? What should I do? How do I play this? All he sees is a huge business transaction. I'm sure he confidently feels like he can win. He won a round in that fight, you know, but for the most part, he also got mauled. Can he fill those holes? I don't know. With Dustin Poirier, I think he's better at compartmentalizing. What's what? I think all he's thinking about is Conor McGregor. He probably would smile at Khabib or shake his hand. I mean, I don't know if you're talking about as he's walking into the octagon or just some point running into them. I think he'd be very respectful. I think Dustin Poirier only cares about punching the clock, punching somebody when he needs to, and then getting back and being a family man. I don't think he gets too caught up in the business of fight politics, prize fighting, things like that.
Have you ever been at a party where you had an ex-girlfriend there and you kind of, even though that relationship's gone and passed and you're with someone new, but you kind of look over like, oh, what's she doing? Who's she talking to over there? I feel like that's the reaction that Conor McGregor is going to have. If Conor McGregor knocks out Dustin Poirier, the first guy he's going to want to see that reaction from is Habib. If Conor McGregor is in a bad spot, the first guy he's going to want to look at is Habib. Like, what? It's just they're intertwined. You know what I'm saying?
I think
it's going to bother him. But I could be wrong. It could actually motivate him too at the same time. Who knows? But I think it's just that feeling of having somebody there. I don't know. Like, I remember one time we went to go see Joe Rogan do stand up at the House of Blues, and Dana White was there. Dana White was almost as close as you can be to the stage, but up in the balcony. I swear to you, that whole night, Joe Rogan would crack jokes, but then he would look up, and he would look up because I imagine he wanted to see, is Dana laughing? Does he think I'm funny? You know, those things happen in our lives. We do that. If George and I are doing something big and our parents are in the audience, we're probably gazing over at our parents like, hey, are they happy? Are they proud? You know, that sort of thing.
I just gazed at mom right now when you said that.
It's human nature. And I can see Conor McGregor doing something like that or having that sort of feeling inside him. You know, it's the same way you see Dana White all happy and smiling when he's around the president or Colby Covington. It's the same thing. Like, people are fighting for acceptance all the time.
And you want to see mom right now? Mom. No, I'm just kidding. She's got her pajamas on. I gave her a little jolt. I know exactly what you're saying, Goz. And I think at some point, Joe Rogan and Dana White did business together because I think Dana was an executive producer to a stand-up he wound up doing on Comedy Central. So I don't know if even that was the audition or but I remember what you were saying. I just don't remember my timeline, but I bet you it was something like that. You're either auditioning for something or you're trying to impress somebody or gain somebody's respect. So for sure, I understand exactly what you're saying. I'm even thinking as rounds are finishing, you think McGregor's not walking to his corner and peeking an eye to see what Habib's doing.
Right. So his presence alone changes the game a little bit. And it's really funny to me because I don't know if you've noticed, but Habib seems to kind of get a kick out of poking Conor. And I think he would show up just for that reason, just to be in the guy's head.
Well, it's a flight. He probably can fly private. And once he lands, he's pretty safe. So, yeah, I hear you. I think if Habib lives in L.A., does he think twice about it? Maybe, hey, am I on that charter plane? You know, am I with other people that have tested? But, yeah, I could see that definitely happening. And he does business in the Middle East, so he could probably take care of a few things, see some people and see this fight. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know how he's mourning his father. I don't know how difficult he's taking it. You saw he's just a human being just like you and I. He'll cry, you know, he had tears when he won that fight, you know, so I don't know what are the holidays like for him, you know, is this going to inspire him to maybe come back? Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe he needs the full year. Maybe he wants to be around fighting. Maybe he doesn't want to be around fighting. Who knows? I see it more as probable what you're saying, him probably being there, as far as messing with Conor. Yes, but not. I think he only does it when provoked. I don't think he goes out of his way to do it. I could see Conor flying across the ocean just to steal a spotlight from somebody or you know what I mean? That's just his way of doing business. But look, going back to what I was saying, I think at some point we're going to get an announcement that this will be for the Undisputed title. And that'll just be one heck of a way for the UFC to kick things off in 2021. Speaking of the UFC and doing business, they had a exceptional, in my opinion, 2020. And I mean, I realized that they didn't come up with the financial figures they probably could have had they had attendance figures. But as far as like the hand they were dealt, that we were all dealt, honestly, I think they did pretty good. Of course, you all saw that video with Dana White. It's known as the Dana White attacks the media video, but really, if you unpack it all, they also provided a lot of numbers of how they grew as a company and what they did on the social media front. But, you know, of course, people like to focus on the negative part as well. But Have you had time to maybe rewatch it and reinterpret it and get feedback from people? You know, we had our spinning back click. We addressed it in the form of a question. Well, one of the topics, I should say, and we answered, but you weren't a part of that panel because you had producing duties that day. But you want to talk about that for a bit?
Sure. Yeah, no, I have had a chance to watch it a couple times because genuinely, I get a kick out of Dana. Like, I feel like the UFC couldn't be where they're at if they would have had somebody else. However, I feel like Dana got them to a level where it's because of his brashness and the way he was that got them there. But once he got to that level, he doesn't realize that he has to kind of change a little bit to remain in that position. And I don't know that he's done that. So what happens is I go back and I watch this video, and of course he's making good points. A lot of it's based off of statistics and things that he's done. But I think he's kind of misconstruing what some of the media said. And I'll be the first one to admit, not all media is the same. There are some people that just say things because they hate Dana and they want to come at him. That's fine. You know, I'm pretty sure Dana feels the same way. There's probably some people he just cannot stand. And even when they make a good point, he probably doesn't accept it. But Dana White saying all those things, what the one thing he has to understand is, what I believe is, if we would have let him do what he wanted, right? If California would have let him go on with the Tachi Palace and all that, I think a lot of mistakes would have been made. And those mistakes would have carried over into the other sports because the other sports hadn't really gotten off their feet yet. And it could have maybe delayed things for the other sports. You know, everybody would have said, look at this tragedy that's going on over here. The UFC just tried and they failed miserably. Maybe we should back off. They're getting negative media, that sort of thing. That could have happened. So no Tachi Palace, I think, actually helped them. I think it really did, because at the beginning, we didn't know much about the virus. And we started learning at a very, very rapid rate. And I think even those extra weeks kind of helped them out a little bit to learn more about how to handle things. Even till today, months later, we're still learning little things that we used to do at the beginning that aren't right now. So when they went over to Florida, even then, like, I think you might have brought it up, or Bond, like what happened with Jacare, right? Like, they were still kind of learning lessons over there, and they did a good job of trying to fix things, but now you got to fix them on the fly, and that's a little bit more difficult. So my point is, yeah, I guess technically he was able to do something great, but it didn't really go his way. If we would have let him have his way, I think he would have had a lot of problems that could have maybe had a domino effect onto other sports and could have made things even worse for the UFC. So I really do think that both sides were kind of right. You know, it was just a matter of finding a middle ground. And that's something that hasn't really happened too much within media and the UFC. There hasn't really been a middle ground. You know, it's one side wants this, the other side wants that. And they just kind of bicker back and forth. You know, he's Dana White. He's going to do those type of videos. And that's fine. I think if you're in the media, you got to have some thick skin. And vice versa. I think if you're Dana White, you're not always going to be right. And every now and again, I'm very sure that if the media wanted to, they could make a video pretty similar and probably make him look bad, right? I mean, that's kind of life, but you got to have a little bit of thick skin. And so, yeah, I watched it a couple times and I laughed at some parts and I thought, it's a little douchebaggy a little bit there, here and there. But, hey, man, that's why the dude's popular.
Yeah, he would have been doing the California event without the commission, if you'll recall. Of course, they can govern themselves. The UFC has credible people led by Mark Ratner where this can take place. But there was just a lot of little red flags that kept popping up. It worked. That's how it basically got to the eyes of the government in California, Governor Newsom, Senator Feinstein, and eventually I think that pressure came down south. I imagine that's where Disney's located. Disneyland's in Southern California. And it was Disney that put a halt, you know. Disney owns ESPN. They're the ones that eventually told him to stand down. I don't think it's because they read an article on MMA Junkie or any of those other media people that got slammed. I think it's because they read the facts, the figures, they knew the data, and they knew that this just would not go off well. There's a lot more to doing business than just, did you get the event off? Okay, good. You know, there's, as a business, I still think, I still believe your partners like ESPN want to believe that they're doing business with people that have business morals, you know. ESPN's also shown football this year and basketball. And so they're talking to those top people there. And those top people aren't able to give any types of assurances at that point. The NBA had no infections in their bubble, which I think went from like July to September or October or something like that. 3 months, I think, no infections. Took them a while to get it together. And that's how they did it. You know, other leagues went different routes. I don't think anybody had as perfect of a run as the NBA in terms of, I mean, zero infections is zero infections. You mentioned Jacare, and I think there was a few others for the UFC, but it was very, very minor. So, yeah, I just think Dana made a big deal out of a video that should have been, that should have started by those who doubted me, including the media, and not just MMA media, just media in general. And now this is what we did. So maybe 10%, 90%. Instead, I think it was more 50%, 50%. And I think instead of that, it came off more boo the media 90% and look at what we did 10%. I don't know that many people like said, oh, wow, they added this many YouTube subscribers or their Instagram follows grew by this. Nobody focused on those numbers because I think everybody else was so caught up in the other message. And for all I know, maybe that was really the zinger that he wanted to do. Remember, he's a multimillionaire. He can have a couple people put stuff like that together, you know, in a couple hours. So that could just be a powerful man having fun, you know, waking up and saying, I think I'm going to mess with this person that day or these people that day. But, you know, it's done. A few people have already answered, you know, and given their opinions on it. We gave ours. I think I may have heard John Morgan's voice in it. But I didn't look at it and see that anybody else popped up in any other way from the USA Today family. And I think there's a USA Today and For the Win mention. Yeah. But, you know, like I say, I mean, I slept like a baby all week. That didn't bother me. And then when I knew it was the topic and it was my turn, I addressed it. And I addressed it as best as I could remember. We filmed Spinning Back like about an hour, half hour after this thing published. I had a chance to hear it once, and then I just gave my opinions based on what I remember. But I remember most of it being March and April drama. In fact, I remember him taking a little heat for even having the Brasilia show because by then a lot of the other sports leagues were cutting things off. And I think the fighters were already in Brasilia or on their way or who knows what. But they did have that show out there, and then they came back, and then they, you know, they tried moving it around the United States, but he was getting blocked. He was getting blocked because, like I say, I think everybody, man, everybody was scrambling. But in the end, the year plays out, and they've had a pretty successful year. A lot of their fighters are happy because they got to fight. They got paid. His employees, according to him, none of them were laid off. I haven't heard anything different. I don't really keep tabs on them. I don't know too many of them that well. But I think I would have heard, you know, that type of news. And frankly, I'm not even the type of guy that says, oh, yeah, what about the 60 you plan on cutting? I think that's just a roster purge they do every once in a while anyway. So here we are. You know, we're back to square one, and it's just part of that MMA drama circle where this thing will wear off and there'll be something new probably next month.
I think the number one stat to be proud of was not letting any employees go. Because UFC is such a massive organization. And I mean, we live here in Vegas, you know, and these hotels are huge and they employ a lot of people, and they've tried their hardest, but they've had to let people go. And you see how much revenue these hotels create. So for the UFC being here in Vegas and them to be able to boast that, I think it's pretty damn impressive. I think that's the stat that really you should be the most proud of.
I'll tell you what, though, if the UFC ever elected to get away from ring girls and get cheerleaders, there's a bunch in our YouTube section, Twitter section for Dana to choose from, man. He's got a lot of cheerleaders out there. I was getting attacked left and right, but I had fun with it. Like I said, it's whatever. You know, you can think what you can. I think we've said enough good things for the rest of 2020 that every week we usually opine and gave some sort of an opinion on every show that took place, how it came across, not just from the athletics, the competition, but from what we were hearing and how the company was dealing with the pandemic, wishing upon any infection we heard of, rumor, you know, not just the athletes, but the ones that they infected as well, their coaches or whatever. We had a couple gym closures here in Las Vegas as well. You think a lot of that wasn't because the shows were coming through the apex? There's some sort of a there's like a period in where you quarantine. You know, you show up to town, you test, you wait, I think, anywhere between 36 to 48 hours in your room, and then they go, you're good to leave the room. You're safe. Okay. Now, between then and when you have to check back in the hotel, I think there's a 24-hour period. That's when you see the guys and gals at Whole Foods or even running or training at another gym, and then they pop in. Now, the UFC's done a lot to accommodate them. They give them their own portable saunas. They give them a couple of rooms each, one of them just so that they can lay out their mats and train in, cut weight in, things like that. So the UFC, I think, does as best as they can to create that bubble here in Las Vegas, but it's only within a hotel. And frankly, I don't know if they overtake. I've heard they overtake a whole hotel, and then I've heard they overtake part of another one. But still, within that little period where you can, where there is ins and outs and stuff like that, stuff can happen, you know? And that's why I think we see a lot of game day or fight day scratches. That's been happening a lot, you know? So
sure.
What are we supposed to do when we hear that? Not mention it? I mean, that's what happened. I'm sure some people don't catch every fight. And when they come in on Monday, they go, hey, so what happened to this fight? Why is Holland fighting Jacare? And what happened with Vittori, you know? And why did he get the jump versus Joker? Wow, shit, because stuff went down during the week, you know? So that's what the media does, is they report what they find out and they try and be as accurate as possible. We always shoot for 100% with double sources, and that's that, you know? But people have a hard time understanding that, and I feel sorry for them, because anybody that gets caught up in this whole the media, and fake news, boy, you are selling yourself short. However, I just caught myself. I was going to go on a tangent and it was going to be ugly, so I'm just going to stop right there and say, just trust in Junkie, the 5-time winners of the World MMA Awards. How about that? Yeah. Well, by the way, those awards are coming up this weekend. We're going to talk about that one way or another, but somebody may join us to talk about that. CBS Sports, December 26th, 9 p.m. Eastern, the World MMA Awards. Go ahead, guys.
This spinning backlick I thought was really, really good. I actually watched it a couple times. And another topic that I wanted to chime in on a little bit was the one about the champions, you know, and which champion do we feel like will lose their belt first? And I thought that was interesting, the answers you guys gave. I want to say yours was bantamweight. Did you do bantamweight?
I just think there's too many guns headed at Peter Yan's way. Mm-hmm. And I for one, I'm going to pick Sterling against Yan. I did give Yan credit and say, hey, look, he's proved me wrong. He's been legit. You know, I probably imagined he was a top 10 guy as he was progressing. I wasn't sure he could get the champ, but he did. But I think Aljamain Sterling's a tough opponent. I think if Sanhagen beats Edgar, he would be next. So let's say he gets past Sterling and fights Sanhagen. That's just a 1-2. I may go with Sanhagen over Yan. Now, again, if he proves me wrong, I'll be the first to go, damn, that Yan's pretty damn good. You know what I mean? But there's a lot of killers in that division. And so that was part of it being my choice. I suppose I could have said, if Jones drops, Blachowicz is in trouble. But I was just going with what I know at that moment. And at this moment, I know Jones would be a heavyweight who's waiting for the winner of Miocic and Ngannou. Ngannou, you could make the argument, boy, it's just a matter of time before he gets his hands on Miocic. But folks, don't forget, Miocic beat him once a few years ago. That was a different Ngannou, but he still beat him. And I'm sure Miocic has gotten better. But if we go list per or category, weight class by weight class, Blachowicz is on a nice win streak. You know, Dominic Reyes did not get finished by John Jones. Some people thought he beat John Jones, and Blachowicz beat him. He may have been the toughest out in the whole division. I don't know. Heta Santos was supposed to be trouble for John Jones if he came back. Split decision, remember? Hell, Glover Teixeira took him out. So, yeah, there's some other cats that are in the way. But, yeah, I kind of went one by one, goes. And, I, you know, Izzy, Habib, and Amanda make it easy for me to skip, what's that, four divisions with Amanda owning two of them? Maybe even throw Shashenko in there? She's not undefeated like Habib and Izzy are. Amanda's 12-1, 13-1. But Shevchenko's pretty stellar. Zhang Weili had a close call against Rose, against Joanna, I suppose. One could say I like Rose in that one. I don't know. Volkanovski maybe is another one I may have missed. He's got a lot of killers chasing him down. You know what I mean? Yep.
That's the one I was going to go with. And they're all, with the exception, I think, of Cater, they're all younger than him.
Mm-hmm. All right. So guess what? Our surprise guest is here. So we'll be back in 10 seconds. I'll give him his proper intro, and we'll talk about what's happening this weekend on CBS Sports.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports. Featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.
I know people are like just assuming that this is an upgrade at the quarterback position, but I don't think we could say that for a fact. I'd say it's a downgrade.
He never really had game-to-game impact, just coming off the edge and destroying people that we thought when we saw his athleticism in college and at the combine. And
The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter.
Listen and subscribe to The Counter on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, we're back, and we're being joined by Rob Hewitt. He's on the other side of the pond, the CEO of Fighters Only, and of course, Fighters Only has put on the World MMA Awards for us over a decade now. They are going to be on CBS Sports on Saturday. So that's December 26th at 9 p.m. Eastern on CBS Sports. Again, I can't emphasize that enough. That was a tremendous announcement. Here is Rob Hewitt. What's up, Rob? How are you?
Hi, George. How are you? Hi, Goz. It's good to see you guys.
It's good to see you, too. And I know you're 8 hours ahead of us, so you've already been distilled by the evening. But we can make you out. And thank you again for joining us. First of all, Merry Christmas to you and your family, and happy holidays and everything that's coming up. Stay safe. I hope it's been that way for you all these last few months. We haven't caught up in a bit, but most importantly, your health and your family. You know what I mean?
Yeah, thank you, George. I really appreciate it. No, all the family's fitting well, thank you. And crazy times here in the UK at the moment. The virus is spreading very rapidly, and we've got new tiers of protection on the go here at the moment. So I apologize for calling from the car. Obviously, it was the only time I would get the call, and I'm traveling home for Christmas now. So I'll be very happy to see the family tonight and getting back together for Christmas.
That's great. Okay. Well, we'll make it short, but we can't. We're happy that we can talk about the World MMA Awards, which we'll get to see on December 26th, 9 p.m. Eastern on CBS Sports. First of all, CBS Sports, I love it. Talk about that announcement.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, it's been a crazy year for everyone this year, and, you know, we've been no exception. But, you know, there was one thing that I was adamant was never going to happen, that we weren't going to let this year pass. And we weren't going to let that year in the timeline of the World MMA Awards pass without us holding a live event. You know, we it's very different this year. Obviously, the red carpet is no more, the crowds, the flashing cameras. So a lot of what everybody will see this year, especially people new to the sport, won't be what we normally produce. You guys know what we normally produce. There'll be a snapshot of that within there. But we will still have the A-list movie star host in Dolph Lundgren. We will still have some live guests from the studios. We will still have some live presentations within the studios. But what's really cool is we will have acceptance speeches from nigh on the four corners of the globe. You know, we've got people calling in from all over the place, including deepest, darkest jungle, to accept their awards this year. So I'm really honored by that. And like I say, I'm proud of the whole team and the whole way we've pulled together to be able to pull something off like this in these conditions, to pay testament and tribute to everybody that's worked so hard to do what they have done for mixed martial arts within 2020, as well as do justice to everybody that achieved what they achieved in 2019, which would have normally been celebrated earlier on this year. So one of the key things to note is that the whole voting and nomination period, we had to switch up this year. It was one of the pivots that we made in order to make this year happen. So this year's period goes from January 1st, 2019, until July the 1st, 2020. So it's actually an 18-month period. And then the rule of the pivots moving forward will be that every year from now on in, next year's awards and the years after will be from mid-year for mid-year for nomination periods for fights.
Okay, I see. So aside from this one being an 18-month period, from here on out, it'll be a 12-month period. And your angle probably is to still get back to what was becoming your home, and that was on International Fight Week, as being part of the MMA sphere?
Well, that all remains to be seen. Obviously, the virus is still very much present. Obviously, nobody knows what's going to happen this year yet. But one thing I can guarantee is that as soon as physically possible next year, or rather when it's strategically the best for us next year, we will be back to holding the live event with the glitz and glamour and doing full justice to our sport. We have done for the last 12 years. As you know, every man in his blog has some sort of award ceremony or some sort of awards communication for them, which is great. But, you know, we are the industry event. We are the industry awards, and it's really important to us that we actually do justice to what we've built for the last 12 years and justice to all the men and women who have sacrificed so much, poured the heart out to make this the biggest and the best sport in the world. And we'll do justice to that in a very different way this year. But next year, we'll be back to our best again.
For sure. You said it. You are the industry standard. I've seen people go up there shaking and in tears, including yours truly. But yeah, I've seen a lot of those tough men and women go up there, and you can just see how much that means to them, no matter what award they're a part of. Even the ones that have been one half of the fight of the year, and I'm talking about the one that may have lost, he's still walking up there proud. It's tremendous. I'm glad you've done this. I love the perseverance you had, where you haven't let anything, including a virus, stop you from doing what you do. So congrats to you and your team for that.
No, thank you, George. You know, we're not called fighters only for a reason. You know, the stuff that's inside everybody within this industry is inside me a little bit as well. And like I said, there's no way I was going to give up on this, and no way that we weren't going to hold something to do justice to what we've built over the last 12 years, but more so do justice to what we've got in this award ceremony for the people who deserve these awards. And you're right, you know, and frankly, you'll see those exact feelings still resonate in this year's show. It still blows me away, the reception that we get and how much these awards mean to the biggest stars and the hardest workers within our sport. And that's been the driving factor behind me doing what I can do to maintain something of real substance, something of real standard, and maintain that feeling, because it's so important to me.
Rob, one thing, I think I might have shared this with you, and I know George and I talk about it often, but the one thing that always stands out to me when it comes to the Fighters Only Awards are that very first show, and just kind of there's this reception area before the event, and seeing the smiles on people's faces, and that feeling of just for the longest time, you know, George and I started when the sport was very, very young and people didn't accept it. And that night, everybody had this look of acceptance, like, hey, we're finally here. Like, look at us all. We're all dressed up. There's awards here. These people know what we're doing. It's not just the UFC. There's other organizations. You've created something really, really cool. And there's certain things that have to happen within a year to make you feel kind of normal. And I'm glad this is happening, because this is one of those things where if we didn't get it this year, the year would just suck that much more. But we're very happy that we're getting it. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about the voting system. You know, you're the Wizard of Oz. You get to peek behind the curtain. But can you kind of give us some insight as to the age groups, the demographics that vote, the countries? Who are the ones that come really strong here in the voting?
Well, to be honest with you, it's amazing how many people do vote, but where the votes come from. You know, it's called the World MMA Awards for a reason, because we literally have people from all over the planet registering the votes, registering the details, and having their say on who they want to win. And I think the exciting thing about all of that is that, you know, all the prophecies made before in the past are actually true. You know, this is a global sport. It does resonate everywhere. It is the biggest and the best sport in the world, certainly as far as I'm concerned, but also millions of other people are concerned as well. And, you know, whatever part that I can play in trying to make that even bigger and provide a service to all those people, that's what I want to do. That's what I've always tried to do, even since we first launched the magazine. And that's still an ambition going forward, that I just want to play my part and add to whatever I can in order to make this sport the biggest thing in the world, and also make the fighters, the celebrities, the people behind the scenes, the executives, the promotions, everybody that's within it, recognized for what they do and how hard they work. And, you know, the other point you made goes about the reception. That's the real sad thing about this year. We will do justice to the sport in what we've produced, and it is highly entertaining. It's got all those emotions, which I do feel comes through the camera. But I think the biggest problem with everything that's happened this year is missing out with that human contact and that in-person connection. And I will miss seeing you guys and all my other colleagues and peers from the industry in that environment where we're all dressed up and we're all celebrating, we're all having a good time. But hopefully that feeling of celebration is something that I can bring during these times when everybody is feeling it. You know, the virus has impacted on so many people mentally, so many people financially, so many people in a very hard mental way. And hopefully by bringing the show and doing what we do, we can add some levity and bring some celebration and good feeling and just get everybody to get that fight back into themselves to think, you know what, we've got through this year. Let's make next year the biggest and the best. And I hope that comes across in the show.
For sure. You know, one thing that you guys have always done a very good job of is creating new categories, new awards. You're always tweaking something in the show that makes things very interesting. And I thought about something this past year when we lost Kobe Bryant in the NBA. There was even talks of possibly changing the NBA logo to be from Jerry West to Kobe Bryant. Have you ever thought about maybe further down the line, would the trophy ever change? Is it always going to be, I believe it's Rashad Evans. I've heard a couple fighters take credit for being that trophy, but would you ever talk about maybe changing that? Is that always going to be that the trophy there?
And which trophy was that, Goz? Sorry, it broke up there.
The award, the World MMA Award, the statue.
To changing it to what? Sorry, to commemorate someone who played a big part that passed away.
Just overall, because you've made changes here and there. Would you ever change the statue, like what the position or something different?
Oh, categorically not. You know, that's our Oscar. You know, that is the trademark. It's the IP. It is the award, and that in its substance would never change. However, you know, I'm all about paying tribute, and that's what the show is all about. And I'm all about paying respect to whoever we possibly can that deserves it. You know, we've named awards after people that's meant so much to people within this industry in order to do exactly that. Obviously, I'm talking about Charles Lewis, who from the very first award, we named the Fighter of the Year award after. Obviously, Sean Tompkins, when he passed away, you know, we did what we did to commemorate everything that he did for people within this sport. I really had ambitions to do something special for someone else this year, but unfortunately it didn't work out. And obviously I don't want to go too much into that because I still have ambitions to pay my respect in a very specific way. But whatever way and whatever mechanism can be achieved to show our gratitude and respect to people who've done so much, I'm categorically down to do. I think that is what the event is all about.
Rob, I apologize for not knowing this, but is this Rashad Evans? Is there somebody that this was molded after?
Yeah, it sounds like he's confirming it is Rashad Evans.
I think he did say it was Rashad, yeah. But we've had quite a few fighters claim it's them.
Kind of looks like Boss Rudin because, you know, oh, there he is. Are you there, Rob?
Yeah, Rashad was the inspiration behind the styling of the award. Yeah, we had an amazing photograph of Rashad, which was so clean and so visually stylistic. That did become the inspiration behind the award, yes.
Got it. Okay. Well, listen, like I say, I know you're on your way to celebrate Christmas. So before this broadcast gets a little too rough there, we don't have a chance to thank you. We want to say thank you for, again, your perseverance to making this show happen. We can't wait to see it on December 26th on CBS Sports at 9 p.m. And Rob, let me just close by saying, Goes and I have interviewed a lot of people in the industry. I can't tell you how many times one of these has been in their background and they display it proudly. Most recently, Burt Watson, who got a Lifetime Achievement Award from you guys. He had his very prominently. So it means a lot to everybody that's ever even been nominated. And of course, the ones that win, very, very special. So we look forward to seeing who the latest winners are of the World MMA Awards by Fighters Only. And thank you again for your time. And thank you again for everything you've done.
Thank you, George. Thank you, Gus. And I'll just end by saying that was another goal of mine. You know, if you used to watch MTV Cribs and things like that, and you'd walk around the pop star's house and see the spaceman, you'd walk around the, you know, the American footballers guy, see the Heisman Trophy, you know, that's what we want the World MMA Award to be. And I can't tell you how happy it makes me feel whenever I see any footage, whether it's a build-up to a fight or someone being interviewed, and that trophy's there on the dining room table or on the sideboard. It means the world to me as well. And rest assured, I will keep fighting to make sure that there's more and more fighters, more and more industry executives, more and more journalists, more and more referees, everybody within this industry who deserves it will receive one of those awards each and every year. And I look forward to seeing you both at the live event. And I'd like to wish you and all your families and the Junkie Nation a very, very happy Christmas. And the best things for 2021. I hope everyone stays safe, and I look forward to seeing you all again soon.
Thank you, Rob. Same to you. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. All right, folks. There you have it. That's Rob Hewitt from Fighters Only Magazine. Lovely chat we've always had with him, whether he's come to the studio, talked by phone, or lucky enough we were able to pull it off here with the video conferencing. He's in the UK, so it's already evening time for him, and he did it on his way to Christmas dinner. Thank you to him again. Goes. So we'll have to wait a couple days. I thought maybe a clue might drop here or there. You know, like, boy, you guys are going to be happy, you know, something like that. But he's always been pretty stoic. However, did you hear him mention Cleveland? He mentioned Cleveland at one point. I'm thinking, now I have to go back and see what Stipe was involved in. But I think he was up for Fighter of the Year, maybe, or something. So I haven't. You know, you and I spent a whole show going over the categories, but that was a few months ago when we were encouraging people to vote. I meant to ask them, hey, did you get one from Nilda in California at MacDoc? You know, something like that. I'm not going to give away my mom's email address, but I was wondering if mom voted. I was watching mom and dad, and they scurried out of the room with a guilt. So anyway, no, kidding, of course. But, yeah, I did hear Cleveland, and I think he said a jungle or something like that. So I don't want to presume what he's talking about there, but there's a huge jungle in Brazil. So I'm thinking Davis and Figueiredo. There's obviously jungles in Africa. We've had a couple African champions, although they don't really make their way there too much. Francis Ngannou does go to Africa from time to time. There's a jungle in Thailand. You see what I'm saying? Like you'd go crazy thinking, but I gotta believe maybe Figueiredo might be that guy. Proudly from Manaus, which is in the Amazon rainforest. But yeah, it goes. He did say Cleveland.
Oh, I missed that part.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, that's December 26th, day after Christmas, 9 p.m. on CBS Sports. Check out the World MMA Awards. Goes, let's talk a little bit about – I feel like if you know where you left off in our last topic, go ahead and finish it because Rob popped in and then we segued. But if not, I wanted to introduce a new topic that was also discussed on Spinning Back Click, but I feel like you may have left off at, we had already talked about Dana White in the media.
I know where I left off.
The champion, right? Which champion might win or lose?
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, I was leaning more towards Alexander Volkanovski, and it's not really a knock on him. It's just if you look at the guys that are waiting for him, they're all kind of streaking. They're all look like they're hitting their peak. And they're all, with the exception of Calvin Kattar, they are all younger than him. And I think that's another thing, too, is these young lions. He's got his hands full, man. He's got guys like Zabit, Brian Ortega, Calvin Kattar, who Who knows if they got to do Max Holloway again? There are a lot of guys in that division that are just right there on his heels. So I think I would have gone with that one.
One could argue, goes, that that he didn't even win his first title defense against Max Holloway. You know, that he lost his last fight. So yeah, it's not intended to be a fight. Just like it's not intended to say the Chiefs are not, they're not going to go 16-0. I mean, they won last year's Super Bowl, but this is a whole new season, and for them, it's a whole new fight, and they could lose every Sunday. Look, my Niners went 4-12, all right, the season before last. The season before last was known as the 2019 season, even though the Super Bowl was played in 2020. But in 2018, we were 4-12. In 2019, we were 13-3 and went to the Super Bowl. In 2020, I believe right now we're 5-9 or something like that. So it can go like that, you know. And then for fighters, they don't play a whole season. Their next season is basically their next fight. So they could win it or they could lose it. When you hear of Yoel Romero, a guy like Yoel Romero is one of the most terrifying men on the planet. You would not want to meet that guy in an alley and then find out, wait a minute, how's he done in his last five? He's only won four of them? You sure he's good? Yeah, he's good. He's just facing other killers. He's getting a little older and some have been, you know, close calls or whatever, but that's just the way it is. It's a question that's presented to us. We answer and as best as we can, but it's never meant as a disrespect. I feel like fighters are a little sensitive too. I gotta lump them in the group with fans and the Prez, Dana White. Hey, the next thing was Pettis. I don't think none of us said he's going to PFL. Come on, slam dunk. We all tap danced and said one. Bellator, I think yours truly said, just stay with the UFC. Boy, were we all wrong. He went to PFL and quick.
Mm-hmm. I mean, with as quick as all that going down was, I'm a little shocked that the UFC didn't seem like one of those where right away they just said, hey, we're not interested. Because I thought he looked pretty damn good in that fight. And he's definitely a guy that's been trying to make changes. But Bellator, I think, might have dropped the ball on this one just because that's a division that they need help in, you know, and who wouldn't have wanted to see Pitbull and Pettis? That would have been great. So I thought they may have dropped the ball a little bit there. But PFL, I mean, I don't blame Anthony. You could scoop up $1 million there. And I wish I would have seen Bellator.
Yeah. The other big name is Benson, but he's 2-0 against him. Chandler just left. They haven't addressed that division, and it can all go like that. You know, that one guy that you mentioned still has a semifinal and a final before he even thinks of 155. I feel like right now he should just go, all right, just get rid of it. Let somebody fight for 155, and that's it. But Bellator doesn't seem too concerned, you know. They're just letting it all hang out in the balance. And I realize we're just coming out of a pandemic. Maybe they're not full speed ahead just yet, but that's the problem you run into a little bit with champs. That's why I've never been too big of a fan of letting that happen. The fighters just don't fight as frequently as they used to anyway. Imagine two titles, you know, that's difficult. But PFL, I mean, like I say, the other thing that surprised me was how swiftly it was done. They must have just thrown out a number that they loved, and maybe Anthony just had resentful feelings and he was being polite and professional by saying, yeah, I'd love to stay with the UFC, first option, but maybe the whole time he just didn't want to. I don't know. But he's with PFL. He'll fight in the 2021 season. Their champ in that division is Nathan Schultz, who's won it twice. But, yeah, that's where he's headed. And that's another big name that the UFC loses on. I don't know. We'll have to examine, you know, what kind of an impact not having a Yoel, Anderson, Pettis. Like, if we were to go back 3 years, how many times did they headline or were they a co-main event? And not just those three, but all the other fighters that have gone. Maybe a Corey Anderson. He's probably headlined a fight night. Why is the UFC so confident they can replace some of those names? I mean, I guess – Was Vettori born recently? Was Holland born recently? By that, I mean born into being a main eventer and just can you plug a Vettori where Pettis was or where Yoel was? Can you do that with Holland where Anderson was? I don't know. Those still seem like holes that aren't fully plugged when they leave.
But maybe the UFC sees it differently. And don't forget, one of the whole conversation can just be the UFC's the attraction. They say the fighters are the attraction, and the fighters are definitely a part of the attraction. But a lot of people just tune into the UFC because they kind of know they're going to have a good time. Even if the card's not that sexy, you love fighting. You love watching fighting. And new stars are born, and you're going to get your fair share of highlights, submissions, knockouts, and that's why you tune in. A lot of people say that the UFC is the star of the UFC.
Would you say PFL has closed the gap on Bellator yet? I mean, these are some interesting signings, dude. And I don't know. I feel like they're starting to close it. I don't know if they've actually closed it just yet. But I get excited for when PFL comes back. There are some matchups that I want to see.
Yeah. I think they have closed the gap on Bellator. I think Bellator works off having 4 tentpole events per year. They're usually pretty big. I would say those are, for me, on the same level of anticipation as excitement as their finals on December 31st and their playoffs in October. So they're matching them on their big events. Do they have the roster depth that Bellator has? No. Do they have the intrigue of, like, the Grand Prix or other unofficial tournaments? Yeah, sort of, I guess, because that's what the Final Eight is. 2 fights in one night is pretty special for me. I like it. But I've gotten to see a couple of them in person here in Vegas and in Long Beach, California. It's just different, man. You know you're going to show up to something different, something unexpected. I don't know, man. It's a good question, Goes. There is something to be said for figuring out who's going to make the playoffs, like who's on the verge of getting eliminated, you know? So some of those events feel like there's a loser leave town or a loser leave promotion feel to it, or you just know their season's over, you know? So I don't know. I'm not ready to say they're number 2 yet, but yes, they've closed the gap.
Wow.
You?
No, I think they're right there. The problem with Bellator is you're right. They have these tentpole events that are pretty good. But just because you have good matchups doesn't always mean they're going to translate into good fights. That just doesn't happen. And it even happens in the UFC. But what saves the UFC is the next week there's another card and there's enough fights on it where it's going to kind of make up for that. Like right away, that bad taste in your mouth is gone. With Bellator, usually the events following a tentpole event are not really that sexy. So if you have a bad showing there, then next week doesn't really do much for you. So that there have been times this year, I think, where Bellator has left you with that feeling. I still feel like overall, though, the quality, the stars that they have is just a little bit more than PFL. But PFL has started to close the gap.
Bellator has just had some fights that, because they take a long time to build it, when it happens, if it's a dud, you're like, oh, come on. Like, MVP and Daly. Recently, they had Velasquez and McFarlane, both undefeated. I thought that could have been, you know, just more epic of a fight. It was very strategic, sort of dominant early on for Velasquez, and then McFarland came on late, so there was a little bit of drama there. But you think back to, like, Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Zhang Weili. I mean, that could be fight of the year, you know what I mean? And look at the throwdown they had. I mean, the UFC got lucky there. I mean, they're both great fighters. That doesn't mean that McFarland and Velasquez aren't. Again, they were both undefeated going in. They deserved both to be there. But then that fight has that let down, and it's like, oh, it just took the steam not only out of that event, but almost the whole month. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I felt like Strikeforce didn't have that, and I think Strikeforce wasn't as spread thin. They'd have 6 or 8 fights. They'd stack them. They had their barn burners, and then they had their stars, and it was a perfect formula. I think with Bellator, they're trying to manage too big of a roster. And so sometimes those failures just, I don't know, you can't possibly walk in to the office on a Monday and or the match, their matchmaker meeting or whatever, and have a good feeling. You feel like, oh man, we got to rebuild from scratch here. You know what I mean? The UFC can do that. The UFC can, they can have a main event where you're like,
Yonner, but by Monday, you're already talking about the upcoming card that has ranked fighters, popular fighters, a possible title fight, number one contender. There's just a lot going on, you know? Mm-hmm. All right, folks, we're going to bounce on out of here. I want to thank Rob Hewitt from Fighters Only Magazine. Check out Fighters Only presentation of the World MMA Awards on December 26th at 9 p.m. on CBS Sports. Good luck to MMA Junkie in the category of Best Media Source and to our colleagues Mike Bond and John Morgan in the category of Best Journalist. Also, have a Merry Christmas, everybody. To those who celebrate something else, happy holidays. We'll be back on Monday to discuss who won the World MMA Awards, all the different categories that they have, and, of course, any of the news that pops up between now and then. I imagine. You know what I'm having fun with, Goes, is Garbrandt, O'Malley, Dillashaw. That's pretty fun to watch on Twitter. And then another one, Jake Paul, Ben Askren, Scott Coker. They're having fun as well, so I'm sure we'll talk about some of the dramatic parts of the weekend as well. We're out of here. Enjoy your weekend with your family. Be safe, be sane, be a champion.